I recently had the privilege of talking with a group of bright, engaged, and thoughtful teenagers. These kids are going places, and I mean that both figuratively and literally because none of them see themselves sticking around in San Francisco.
I love San Francisco. I love the Bay Area, but when it's my time to go to college, I will be leaving because it's just too much here.
No offense, SF, but I kind of want to leave. It's kind of crazy.
I've always wanted to leave since I was a kid.
But that's not to say that they have no hope for the city or that they aren't committed to ushering in change. Quite the opposite.
Now that I'm leaving soon, I feel like a lot of pressure to just be in my community so much so I could influence it and change it for the better, like while I still can.
I'm Laura Wenis. Today, we'll hear from three young people who are active in their communities and frustrated with education, the cost of living, and persistent, damaging narratives about race. We'll take a hard look at the city from their perspectives and hear how they think the city should change course. From the San Francisco Chronicle, this is SF Next, Fixing Our City. My three guests are all high school students I connected with through a collection of youth programs under JCYC. The name stands for Japanese Community Youth Council, but this umbrella organization serves children from all backgrounds and all over the city.
My name is Ricky Norris. I am 16 years old. I go to June Jordan School for Equity. I work with MYEEP.
That's an acronym, MYEEP, and it stands for the Mayor's Youth Employment and Education Program. It helps high school students learn life skills like interview prep. Ricky also works with a Bayview nonprofit that feeds the homeless and offers education services like literacy support.
It's just different things that we do for the community because Bayview doesn't get a lot of that.
Hello, my name is Alexis Rodriguez. I'm 18 years old, a senior at Summit Shasta. I grew up around the Bay Area and Peninsula.
Alexis has worked with a variety of organizations based in San Francisco, but mostly YCD, Young Community Developers.
My primary work and services is kind of focalized around uniting Black and Brown students that come from all different districts in San Francisco.
I am Evan Hermelon. I am 17 years old. I am a senior at George Washington High School. I'm part of SF YouthWorks. I'm a part of the youth leadership team.
That's a group of five youth who help facilitate employment development workshops for other young people. Evan also started and runs the Indonesian club at his school.
That's a really big part of my life right now.
So the main thing I want to ask you about is the things that you care the most about, like what affects you most in your day-to-day life.
I would say the housing crisis. My family, we have been renting all of our lives. And we've had some friends and other family members that have had to move out of San Francisco because the prices were way too expensive.
Sounds like that's relatable.
Yeah. I was going to say for my parents, they used to work for the city. And then during the pandemic, that changed.
I've moved around the Peninsula and Bay Area a lot. And it's exactly because finding stable housing is really hard. Not only for adults, but kids too. I'm a ward of state and fresh out foster youth. Like I just turned 18. So now that I'm kind of on my own, it's been really hard to just find some place where I'd really be able to stably live. And I think because I've always known how hard it is, that's always made me put a lot of trust and like faith in the education system. I've always had the blessing to, you know, have different family to live with. But also, I've had to work. I've worked two jobs all throughout high school. So since I was 14, I work with Ricky also in MYEEP. That's given me the opportunity to work like at a really young age. So I'd be able to afford, you know, buying things and having a decent pair of shoes and having food in my stomach. Getting support systems and resources from the city can be kind of tricky to find. I think there's this narrative that if you're in the system at all as a foster youth, as a ward of state, you know, if you're eligible for welfare or any type of city benefits, like you're kind of set for life. I think it's a narrative that needs to completely change because I'm not going to say I've never received any benefits, but they're really hard to find. People also say San Francisco has so many resources for people
of color.
I don't see it.
It's really hard for a lot of us, especially kids of color. A lot of white kids say, well, if people of color just work harder, if they just try more, or if they just go outside and do this like we do, it's not like you do. We don't get those things, especially not in San Francisco. A lot of the things that they offer are for the media and it's publicized and it's, okay, well, we'll give you this, da da da, if you take a picture with us, and then you, whole time, you never get that. And a lot of the things are fake and they're only for media. We could be helping get kids off the street. We could be mm-hmm. helping get elderly people off the street, veterans off the street. Like, that's the thing. Like, I seen this homeless man and he was, I heard him talking to someone and he was saying he used to be in the military. They make you think like, oh, if you go to the military, you're going to be set or da da da. No. And it's, that's terrible. They fight for our country and they still end up with terrible situations in the end.
People put a lot of filters on eligibility as well. And I think especially with homelessness, mm-hmm. there's this question of, well, how do we provide enough housing for our houseless community? These housing places are also requiring that you stay sober, that you cannot use drugs living here, and you need to have a curfew in and out. It's really hard to combat those two issues of drug and substance abuse and houselessness, because to tell someone they need to break a habit in 2 days in order to have a home to sleep in at night.
2 days is crazy.
A lot of people can't do it.
I'm learning a lot right now from you, because you guys grew up, like, I guess, similarly as someone who's, I mean, I guess, person of color. I mean, I'm
like Asian. You are. I'm not a yeah, race. Okay.
If the police come over here right now, yeah, you're a person of color.
Okay, okay. Thank you. There's different, like, I guess, levels to it.
Mm-hmm. Different experiences, yeah, definitely.
For sure. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of people in my community say that people of color or like low income people, like they have a lot of benefits and they don't have to work for anything. Like, I've heard that before.
Yeah. Mm.
And yeah, there's just like a lot of preconceived notions about the whole thing, but it's not like that. And people need to be educated on that.
How can we better educate ourselves, each other, the public, about these issues, about those realities?
It's not going to be easy because society already has a mindset filled of lies and whatever they're told to believe in the political eye. So they're not going to fully understand that. And we children, kids or youth, we don't really get a voice. It's filtered into what they needed to say for their campaign or for the media.
I think there's a really big generational difference. We live in a time where kids rely on social media so hard. We rely on the internet for a lot of things.
Things like tutorials and how-to videos, yes, but also videos in which people share knowledge about social issues, history, politics. That reliance may be generational, but these students are quicker to point out how unreliable social media is than many adults I know. They tell me that Instagram posts have to be as short and attention-grabbing as possible, which eliminates context. And it's rare to see any kind of sources cited. I asked them, how do you know what's real, what to believe, what someone's agenda is?
That's why it's so important to teach it in the classroom, because there it would be taught through a very neutral lens.
My school is in the SFUSD, but our curriculum is not the same as SFUSD students. We learn similar things, but it's not too restricted, because we know that the way the SFUSD system is, it is very restricted to a way where you are taught one side of the story, one side of our history. And there's, so biased. And it leaves
in
out.
Which direction?
Huh?
Like, what's the bias?
It's towards the white, the Europeans. They have like a whole like chapter. Look in the Asian Americans, the black people, like you look at all the people of color, they only have a itty bitty portion of it. Then the teacher is only allowed to talk about this much of that. So the reason I like my school is because it's different and we want everyone to learn the truth behind our history, because we will never know if we're being, like I said, it's being filtered.
The way that we are taught about other ethnic groups during U.S. history, like the Native Americans, and I learned about the Chinese Exclusion Act, we're always looking at other ethnic groups, portraying them negatively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As like victims and stuff. We don't really get to see Asians or black people or other ethnic groups
in a positive light. Definitely. Definitely minorities are kind of pigeonholed into a trauma dump narrative, mm-hmm. where the only stories we have to tell are negative connotations and representations of our past and our history and how we got to where we are today. And I think it kind of puts on a narrative that like minority groups don't have anything positive to
and
celebrate about themselves.
In communities to where it seems as if everything is just negative.
There are a lot of issues with our schools right now. Like, I was just reading a news story today about how the heat doesn't work in a lot of schools. Oh, and, like, people are freezing.
Yeah, I'm anemic. They don't work. And they'd be like, the heater's on full blast. And like, it feels like AC.
Freezing.
Yeah. Then we had to keep the windows open due to COVID. So it's... Yeah. We're in McLaren.
COVID was a major factor in many aspects of these young people's lives, and it changed the whole city.
A lot of people are invalidating how much the pandemic in that year changed everyone. And it didn't just change individuals. It changed our economy.
Our groups,
you know, I feel like being downtown in San Francisco, it's not at all the same as it was before COVID.
Definitely.
I think it's just changed everything. And it wasn't even just the pandemic. 2020 was such a transformative year.
That was a lot happened that year. And like a lot.
Yeah, I know, like when I was still applying for colleges, I wanted to write my main essay about just how much of a toll that year took on me and how it changed every aspect of my life and my interests and the person that I want to become.
Ricky wants to be a therapist and says the mental health resources that were a huge topic during lockdown seem to have been forgotten.
A lot of the kids who are going through true mental health and depression and social anxiety, before COVID, they didn't even have those issues or problems to even deal with. And then now that COVID is quote unquote over, they don't even have anyone to help them talk it through.
The school district also switched to a new payroll system to disastrous effect. Many educators have not been paid correctly or on time, or they've had their benefits inappropriately allocated. We'll talk about how teacher pay issues affect students' lives after a break. Before we go, a reminder that we want to hear from you. We'd like you to have a voice on this podcast too. Do you have a solution you want this city to pursue? Do you know someone who's making a difference on an important issue? Send a voice memo or write an email to sfnext@sfchronicle.com. I've been talking with local high school students Ricky Norris, Evan Hermawan, and Alexis Rodriguez. Evan brought up how the school district's chaotic transition to a new payroll system, as well as low teacher pay more generally, are affecting him and his peers.
One teacher in particular, she hasn't been getting paid for like a long period of time. And I don't think she's heard back since. And it's just a really unfortunate situation because our own like educators, the ones who teach us education is really key for like a successful future. The ones who are teaching us are not getting paid. And that just shows that they're not appreciated enough. And I find that really disheartening.
A lot of the teachers at my school do not feel comfortable teaching there because they do not feel like they're being treated correctly.
Like teachers, they already go through so much, like putting up with kids.
Yeah.
Kids that don't necessarily like
appreciate
respect you.
Them as much as they should. Yeah, it's very difficult.
How does it affect the students when the teachers are out or when they're underpaid or underslept or?
It affects our learning because a lot of teachers can't live in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I mean, or in San Francisco because
of them commute.
And I just think like that's crazy because they should be able to be 5 minutes away. And a lot of the times our education systems are being left out and they're being given to more political things like over police. Like we don't need those things if we're not even for the police think we're not even being protected. So we should be getting a better education.
Yeah,
I think
bad.
Supporting teachers is how you support youth because, you know, all our life, half of our days and half of our lives is in a classroom with these teachers. They're pretty much like our second parents.
One thing that you had all brought up earlier, the question of equitable school access, like who gets to go to which schools, the schools where you have smaller class sizes and where your teachers can have a one-on-one relationship with you and that do have adequate funding and where, you know, the place isn't literally falling apart.
Yeah. Sounds like private schools. I don't know much about them, but obviously you have to pay a lot to be a part of those schools. And a lot of people in San Francisco can't afford that. Mm. And we're left with like public schools that have buildings falling apart.
Overcrowded and, classrooms and underpaid teachers.
Underpaid teachers.
Absolutely. I think also the whole application to high school that SF students go through, you're kind of just randomly placed. Out of all the SFUSD schools, Lowell is the most competitive to get into and everyone wants to go there because they do get a lot of money. Their buildings aren't falling apart and their teachers are really invested in giving them what we would say is a private school education.
And I think it's so interesting that resources are all brought to certain communities, and other districts in San Francisco, which are predominantly Black and brown, are left in the dark. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to pursuing a higher education and getting really great opportunities for your career and future, it's like you really have to dig deep if you aren't located in a place that automatically gets it handed to you.
Yeah.
So I think that's so crazy that that's already like
set in stone.
Set in stone, especially when it comes to like picking out your high school, because a lot of these eighth graders aren't thinking about that yet.
And they say like, oh, 11th and 12th grade are your most serious years. No, all of them are your most serious mm-hmm. years, because when I went to a lot of the HBCUs last week, they look at your ninth grade year too. And I thought, well, because I have a 4.0 now, they won't look at my ninth grade year because I was on Zoom. So I thought I got a pass card. No, they look at that and they go, ugh, okay.
Doesn't seem fair, though.
It doesn't.
Too bad I'm not an admissions person.
Yeah. But it's just the way it is at this point.
I think also it shouldn't be a burden as it is on an eighth grader. Like, you know, 13-year-olds shouldn't have to decide which, you know, a basic primary education is going to influence the rest of their life. Like, I think the school board and the city should be able to distribute funds enough to each district and high school in each district to where kids shouldn't have to bet on their future. 13-year-olds shouldn't have that burden to play with their whole entire future like that.
Yeah.
Why is a lottery process so dangerous? Mm-hmm. You could end up anywhere and that'll change everything.
I do want to ask all of you what you think should be done about some of the issues that we've talked about today.
So I think a collective as a city to really invest into kids' education, because that's where everything starts, goes a long way. You know, educating kids in the classroom about housing, about what it's like to create inclusive spaces, that's important because that's what they take outside of school.
Alexis, Ricky, and Evan also agreed that they'd like to see some practical life skills classes in their curricula, especially financial skills, since college tends to come with major debt.
How can you even get approved for a credit card as an 18-year-old with no credit?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's things they don't talk about.
They don't learn those things. We learn about, learn how to write this essay. Essays are great. Essays do help you. But what is going to help me, teach me how to come to an interview properly? I just feel like we should learn a lot more in a classroom that we're not. And a lot of those topics are skipped over because they feel like, well, this is the curriculum. You need math, English, science, da-da-da-da-da-da. But what about those things, those life skills that we are going to need? Because like she said, a lot of our time is in those classrooms and a lot of us don't have those families to come home to teach us those things.
But they really want influential adults to pay attention to what their constituents actually need.
I think the change makers who have the most influence to shape the issues we've talked about, like houselessness, food, education, should actually be with the kids to see what they think, to see what their classrooms actually look like. And I don't think it should be artificial. Oh, an important person's coming in today. Everybody be on your best behavior. No, I think they actually need to take their time to be in their communities.
Yeah.
Our politicians in San Francisco, all of our city officials, you guys need to actually be in these communities that you are making decisions for.
Not for just a picture.
That's where the conversation started, remember? Their frustration with influential people just showing up for the photo ops, not to learn more about the communities that they make life-changing decisions about. Young people can often see through what adults are doing. So I asked them, what are we getting right?
It's getting a little hard. It's a lot of wrong more than right.
Are we getting anything right?
What hope I do have is young people start getting a platform where they can truly be heard. Because a lot of the walkouts or the strikes and all the things, we're still not heard because a lot of the things are still happening. I hope that people of color, young people, can truly be heard and truly know that their voices do matter in a, no matter what setting they're in, because they should not be told to filter what they have to say.
I hope that we can deal with the homelessness problem. I think we could do it like in a way that we could also help out homelessness, not just like kick them out
of
the city.
Not just get them out of sight. Because
we need to help them feel better and feel like they're in a world that is looking out for them.
I do see a lot of beauty in the city. I think it's so convenient. I really appreciate that we have free transportation on the bus. Amen. I appreciate how efficient our public transit is, because it's not like that anywhere else.
You gotta wait an hour.
I appreciate how diverse it is. I really do. And I appreciate how big it is. But I think the people who make decisions here, the people in City Hall, the mayors, our supervisors in each district, they're not doing enough, in my opinion. Mm. I think a lot of times where kids are presented opportunities to pursue leadership in San Francisco, we're making decisions for the adults to take credit for. We're in talking circles and we're in like idea creativity circles talking about these issues, and adults are asking us, well, what do you think? What should we do? And the adults are translating it to their professional platforms.
To make it seem like they said it when they were not even there.
And I think San Francisco needs to work on that. I don't think they appreciate the youth in their city as much as they do. And it shows in all of our differences in the way that we've been brought up in education.
This whole conversation.
Yeah. So that's my letter to San Francisco.
My letter.
And yeah, I do appreciate the city, but I know there's a lot of work to be done, and I am like really invested in making that happen.
Yeah, it's your farewell letter.
Yeah. Farewell, I'm leaving.
I'm out.
Goodbye. Never coming back.
That was Alexis Rodriguez, a senior at Summit Shasta High School, Ricky Norris, a junior at June Jordan School for Equity, and Evan Hermawan, a senior at George Washington High School. Fixing Our City is part of the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Next project, where we explore how the city will chart its future and address its biggest challenges. Send an email to sfnext@sfchronicle.com. You can also DM us on Twitter. We're at SF Next. I'm Laura Wenis. Coming up on SF Next, Fixing Our City, Cynthia tries matzo ball soup for the first time ever with Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, who explains why he thinks the structure of San Francisco's government is problematic. See you next week. Cynthia Lopez produces and reports for Fixing Our City. Gary Baca is our sound engineer. King Kaufman is the executive producer. Jonathan Krim is the SF Next project editor. Fixing Our City is part of the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Next project, exploring how the city will shape its future and tackle its biggest problems. Read stories by our reporters, check out interactive data breakdowns, and find our podcast archive at sfchronicle.com/sfnext. If you have a solution you'd like us to cover, or you know about a city that's doing something right, get in touch. Shoot an email to sfnext@sfchronicle.com or find us on Twitter @sfnext.